Ladies and gentlemen, very good evening and a warm welcome to you all, wherever you are listening, watching, podcasting. I don't care what you're doing. Welcome to the Red and Blue Review. My name is Nick Philpott, and soon, in a couple of seconds, you're going to be seen. I'm going to be joined with a right old motley crew tonight. And there's the first one. Okay. And watch out, another egghead. Here comes the other one. Okay. Hang on. And then there's the superstar. Ian Lyons, welcome back, mate. You can get rid of that for one night only, because you're not going to be for one night only. You're going to be on a couple of times before the end of the season. Are you all right, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very busy, as you well know. But yes, so busy that I missed yesterday's game. Gutted.
Yeah. We'll come back. Greg, I'm going to cut you in a minute. But Tim, thank you for popping on. I know you're only going to be on for a couple of moments, but you okay, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Cannon, welcome, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, good evening. Yeah, very well, thank you.
And since we spoke pre-show, normally there's 180 on board. There's actually 230 on board for this Saturday's game, for the Fulham game away. And that is 10% of the entire Palace fan base that are going to the Fulham away game are going to be on the boat on Saturday, which we'll come on to a little bit more. Greg Ellis, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, know out in Facebook, YouTube land, wherever you're listening or watching in the world, you won't know that Ellis turned up yesterday. He actually rocked up to Selhurst Park for the first time in months, okay? And we banged in five. So, Ellis, you're going to be make sure you come to every home game for the rest of the season. Is that clear?
Absolutely. I'd love to be there on Wednesday, but I think I've been access denied already.
Nice to see you wearing the trousers in your house, but the same in my house, exactly the same in Lyons' house, and probably the same in Jim's house as well. Right, before we get onto the show, we're going to be covering the ladies' game, we're going to be covering news from the club, we're going to be covering lots of stuff this evening. But before we get into any of that, Tim has joined us very quickly, ladies and gentlemen. He wants to tell us about something that's been going on at the club over the recent weeks, certainly yesterday, that I wasn't aware of until he phoned me pre-show. So, Tim, tell me what happened outside the stadium last night.
Yeah, so it looks like it's been going on for a couple of weeks or a couple of games, to be honest. Thanks to Yasmin and Mr. Adams for making us, they contacted me and made me aware of some very unpleasant behaviour from drivers when people are exiting the stadium heading towards Selhurst Station. Separate issues at the station, but it's actually been reported of drivers actually deliberately driving into and through the supporters, including a supporter on crutches who it was reported was possibly even clipped by a woman who was doing the driving, and also parents with kids being driven at. Totally unacceptable. The club are aware of it. I have been in touch with them. They are working also with the train people regarding the issues at Selhurst, but this is not acceptable. This just can't happen, especially with what goes on around the world with people driving at crowds. So Nick's kindly said I can come on. I would love anybody else who's seen any behaviour like this or has got any other incidents, not only at Selhurst, but walking down to Norwood or whatever, if they can just email me at the FAB email address so I can pass it on and raise it with the club. This can't be allowed to go on, because as both Andy and Andrew and Yasmin pointed out, it won't be long before someone actually gets hit and someone actually gets injured and hurt, which we can't have. So I'm not sure what the club can do when it's not on club grounds, but they want to do something about it. So the more information we get, the more incidents that we can report and get looked at, I think the bigger the gravitas will be and they will have to do something.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you can contact Tim. Put that address back up, Nigel, please. TimCPFCFAB@outlook.com. That's TimCPFCFAB@outlook.com. And if anybody has got any information or anything they want to share, any incidences you're aware of. Tim, I'm not, as you quite rightly point out, mate, I'm not certain of... It's actually under the club's jurisdiction away from the ground. It's obviously a police matter away from the ground.
That's I'm guessing my understanding, but I know that they are talking to the train operators regarding Celeste. I don't know anything else apart from that at the moment. As you can imagine, it was only today that I've been made aware of it. So, but they do obviously have
clarity, though, Tim, just for clarity, you're saying that these are members of the public, not Palace fans driving.
Correct. That's what I'm led to believe. This is why I want to get as much information or reports as I can, just so we've it's not just one or two bits of information. But from what I've been told, yeah, it's not fans driving at fans. It's just people, members of the public.
Well, it should be easier now to identify with the amount of camera phones out there now and easier to get somebody registered.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But for that reason, yeah, exactly. Richard Jumps just said exactly the same thing. Car registration, give the details to the police or Tim, yeah, and let the club deal with it. Let them pass out. Yes, I know you're out there, love. No, they were at the station, but this is not the Holmesdale Road.
Right. Okay.
Okay, just for clarity, obviously, anybody got any more information, I'll be delighted to see it. Simon, I can see you out there. Good evening, bro. I hope you're well, mate. So thank you for joining us, Timbo, because we've got other
thank
people.
You.
All right, buddy. Nice to see you, mate. Love to Wendy, and I'll see you both next Saturday on board. Make sure you bring your wallet with you, because there's lots of raffle prizes. Yeah, and about time you bought me a beer anyway. So
cheers, boys.
Take care, mate.
Cheers.
Right, so wherever you are listening in the world, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget you can pick us up on our podcast. If you don't manage to get the whole hour in this evening, it'll be available on a podcast literally immediately after the show. It'll be out on all the socials. You won't find me on the socials because, Jim, I'm sure you realise by now I've come off Messenger and Facebook and all that sort of crap. Do you actually do much on Facebook?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I'll look at it and I'll say happy birthday to the odd person, but I don't get involved with Facebook, TikTok, anything, X, whatever they're called. Social media. Too many idiots on it.
Yeah, you're right, mate. And you didn't wish me happy birthday on Tuesday, did you?
No, it's only my friends.
Right, where's the delete button? Okay, we're going to move on.
See, I was going to say, Nick, before he jumped, he missed the obvious and said, no, I've clearly blocked you. You're such a stalker. It's outrageous.
Shut up, the pair of you. Let's get on with it. So, ladies and gentlemen, before we do yesterday's events, okay, at Sellers Park, and you can tell the mood in the camp is obviously quite buoyant, even between the four of us, because yesterday, we haven't even spoken about this pre-show. So this is going to come at you raw and unedited and unrehearsed. So enjoy every minute of it. But before we get on to the men's team, we've got to talk about the women's team. Because for those that you don't know, yesterday they played down at the Dripping Pan away at Lewis in their penultimate game of the season and solidified, basically, their top position. They need to lose, or there needs to be a goal swing of 22 goals for Crystal Palace ladies not to be able to make it up into the WSL, which will be an area is. So Palace sitting on top with 45 points with one game to go. So they need a swing, Charlton need a swing of 22 goals to be able to, even if we don't win when we're at home to Sunderland on next Sunday, I believe it is. And it's, look at that, Palace are going to go up and they're going to go up as champions, and they're basically already there. So I don't know what to say, really. I'll talk you through the goals in a second, but it was a great performance. They won 2-0 at the Dripping Pan, another away win. In goal was Demi Lambourne. You got Rhea Putzville, Amy Everett, Hayley Nolan, Felicity Gibbons, Alexia Potter, Sinead Hopcroft, who scored one, Annabelle Blanchard, Molly May Sharp, who scored the second, Izzy and Atkinson and Elise Hughes. And what a season they've had. The manager, she picked an unchanged team from a team that won up top north last week. And Hopcroft scored in the 25th minute and Sharp scored in the 50th minute. For those of you who haven't seen the first goal, you thought Eze's goal was a bit special. Have a look on YouTube because it's there. I've seen it today. It was a wonder strike from 25 yards out by Sinead Hopcroft. It was an absolute sublime effort to give Palace the lead in the first half. Second half, the 50th minute, it was a long punt basically through the centre. Molly May Sharp ran onto it and buried it home to give us a 2-0 win and basically make us winners and likely to be champions. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that this Sunday coming, sadly, they are playing their last game at Sellers Park. Let's get as many people down to Sellers Park as we can. It'll be great to, yeah. I was watching I saw that clip on YouTube of the Lewis away game yesterday, and the Lewis end was near on full. You know, there was probably a couple of under Palace fans down there as well. But anyone, they kicked off an hour before the men's kicked off. So, Sam, quite right. There's probably a few Brighton fans in the Lewis end as well, yeah, which I get. I don't mind. But I think, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to put any comments in the chat with reference to how well the girls have done this season, please put it in there. I'm in touch with a couple of guys that are doing a separate podcast on the ladies, and I make sure everybody relevant gets to see it. So congratulations. Ian's going to keep his eye on the chat today, and then see any of the comments come through. Please, anything relevant to what we're going to be talking about, put it in the chat. Ian will pick it up. For those of you who didn't know, people were asking last week, what's happened to Franca? Young Franca, well, he's had groin surgery and he will now miss the rest of the season. Boys, I think we'll start there if you don't mind. Injuries. Christ, have we had? Jim, I might as well come to you first, really, and then I'm going to ask the others as well. Jim, I don't remember a season where it's been so many and so chronic injuries. You know, I know we've talked about soft tissue injuries and everything else, but this is another one. Any reason why? Is there any correlation as to why?
Well, I think we all knew that answer. There wouldn't be any injuries, would there? I don't know. I think it's down to a lot of luck at times. You know, I know we've had a lot of hamstrings, but I mean, medically, they get treated better than probably any sportsman in the world these days, the facilities that they've got. So, we've had a lot, but if you actually go through all the teams in a league, they're all sort of some of them on bare bones. Maybe the play, especially in the Premier League, it's a very high intensity game. Some of the squads aren't probably equipped. I mean, West Ham yesterday looked dead on their feet. You know, I'm not taking anything away from our result, but they just looked as if they didn't really want to be there. So I think a lot of it is just, it's luck. Hamstrings especially, you know, like you can be the fittest guy in the world and suddenly you make one wrong move and you've pulled your hamstring. I've done it a few times. It's just one of them things, I think. I mean, they probably got overworked. And I don't like the way that they have to stand about 4 or 5 minutes. It's like asking a racehorse to race 500 yards and then stop and then wait for 3 minutes and then go off again. Not that players are racehorses, but there's a lot of standing about, you know, and then all of a sudden they're sprinting. You know, this VAR is making things so slow at times. I'm not saying that's a reason, but you know, if you're warmed up and then suddenly warmed down and then you've got to go sprinting again, you never know. So,
I mean, I compared Sellers Park, you said, and I thought the pitch looked spectacular to the pitches that you used to play on, Jim. And I think to myself, Christ, I can understand you lot getting bloody injuries, but they're playing on what is in effect a snooker table these days, and they're still picking up all these injuries.
Yeah, well, as I say, if we knew how to combat it, they wouldn't get injured, would they?
Boys, anything you want to add? Greg?
I think what puzzles me is, you know, we are traditionally a team that doesn't play in Europe or, you know, goes on many cup runs. So we probably are one of the sides in the Premier League that play the fewest games every season. So it's strange that the number of injuries that I had and, you know, I think this year, and, you know, if someone's out there that can correct me, I think the majority of the injuries have been hamstring injuries. Now, I know a lot of people were sort of putting that on, you know, that Roy's training sessions or whatever. But, you know, I don't feel like that could be the sole reason for that number of hamstring injuries. But, yeah, I do find it strange, you know, that the injuries, like you say, the chronic injuries that you're out for a long time. Some of it is just bad luck. You know, there's always going to be an element of bad luck. You know, they've got top facility now at Cobra's Cope, you know. So, and you've already mentioned that the quality of the pitch. So, if anything, you would expect things to improve. So, it's an absolute quandary. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what clubs do about it, but also what the FA, you know, there might be something that they can put in place. I mean, you know, I'm not entirely sure what that is, you know, because I'm pretty sure you don't want to shorten the length of games. Appreciate that games are now longer because of VAR. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Those of you who are interested, Middlesbrough 1, Leeds 1 after 14 minutes. Leeds just scored a penalty after 14 minutes. Ian, you wanted to say something on the injury scenario?
Yeah, I mean, just for that, just going to the chat, Paul Bristow obviously is picked up on stopping for VAR checks. Can't be doing any good, feeding in on what Jim was saying about people starting and then having to stop and wait around. Booms Lane CA, right, longer games and more games with same players. Yep, I think I would agree with that as well. Sam White's saying the biggest problem we've had is most of the injuries we've had have been to our best players. And unfortunately, the squad isn't good enough. And I think that probably feeds into what I was going to suggest, is that it's affected us more because we've got a smaller starting 11, if you like. Jim touched on it earlier. People like Man City and that could effectively have the first, 15 players out and not have a noticeable difference. Liverpool have managed to carry some of their injuries as well. And I think, ironically, with someone like City, you've got someone like Pep who insists on playing a smaller pool of players as he can and has the fewest changes during the season. But when it's needed, he can call upon £100 million players to come off the pitch. And I think back in your day, Jim, as well, the pitches were probably a little more forgiving as well, weren't they? When it was raining, sliding tackles, all that sort of stuff. I think nowadays the pitches, the Deso pitches especially, are a lot tighter on the studs and everything else, and just general wear and tear. And I think we're going to have to probably, and other teams, Yasmin touched upon what I had said as well about Newcastle already looking at this, and I think Liverpool are as well, as to what they can do in their training and everything else in order to reduce these injuries moving forward. But yeah, I'm certain as well that Roy's training methods weren't necessarily helping with us, certainly with such a fragile squad as well. But hopefully people are now looking at it, teams are now more aware of it, and I'm sure there'll be some more in-depth research from all the clubs moving forward for the next season.
Thank you, mate. I've just seen Fergus tear that. Even Ferg, back to get your ass on here. I pulled my hamstring waiting for a bus, he said, as long as it wasn't me that was driving it. Jason's out there. Nice to see you, Kate. Hope you're well, buddy. He pulled his hamstring when Eze scored the second yesterday. Good lad. Okay, so I suppose we better touch on that boring game at Sellers Park yesterday. I know there's not much to talk about, really. Greg's going to cover it off in detail in a second. Nigel, perhaps we can start off with the lineup, if you'd be so kind. Henderson in goal. Now, it's a shame Gel's not on, because I do need to talk about Henderson and Gel's thoughts on it. Gel was supposed to be telling you all what he really thought of Henderson, especially on the first goal yesterday. Munoz, Klein, Anderson, and a very welcome, unexpected addition was Chris Richards, which we'll come on to in a second. Mitchell, Wharton, Hughes, Elise, Mateta, and Eze. Now, the Chris Richards thing, it came a bit of a bolt out of the blue, really, because I wasn't expecting him to even be back yet. In fact, I actually thought Rob Holding would start yesterday, if not Tomps. I thought, Tomps was on the bench and Holding was on the bench, and I thought Holding was going to start. And then out of the blue, out of nowhere, they announced that Chris Richards is starting, which, you know, to me, it put us on the front foot before we'd even kicked the ball. Greg, I'm going to hand over to you for a couple of minutes to see how you get on. Between the three of us, we'll jump in on any salient points as and when you go through your bits, please, mate.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no worries. Well, look, this is actually the first time I've ever done a match review, because I did actually check when I did last go to Selhurst Park. I have been to away games in that period, but that was my first game in 6 years at Selhurst Park, which is pretty terrible, given that I'm involved in the Crystal Palace podcast.
Really? Is that the first time? I thought you'd been asked before.
Yeah, it was 6 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. We lost 1-0 to Spurs. I had to look it up. But, you know, what a game to choose, you know. And, I must say, after being away from Selhurst for so long, you know, it did feel slightly strange, and obviously lovely to be back in the ground. I felt from like the lineup, you know, I was quite excited, really. You know, I've not seen a lot of these players. You know, that's the first time I've seen, you know, Elise and Wharton. You know, I was buzzing for it, really. And I think from the off, West Ham, they couldn't get a kick, and I thought Palace were just moving the ball so well. And you know, please forgive me, you know, the you guys that go every week and know this, but I just felt that the movement, the footwork of Eze and Elise was unbelievable. You know, I was sort of sat there thinking, there's not that many players that are able to move like that. And you know, I thought that was pretty amazing. But look, straight from kickoff, really, Palace were on the front foot. They looked really hungry, I thought. They were really up for it. Wharton's ball distribution, you know, I'd love to know, someone out there, if you can tell me what, like, the pass completion was. Everything just seemed to go through him. And I was thoroughly impressed, you know, at 19 years of age. He looks like a player that we've never had. I don't know, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I just thought, when have we ever had a player like that completely boss the midfield? Ian?
I mean, I said the last time I was on, but the first time I saw Wharton, I can't quite remember. Clearly, I wasn't there when Jim broke into the side, so, you know, forgive me for that. But I can't quite remember another player I've been as excited about joining the club. I mean, if there was such a thing as man love, that I'm just smitten. You know, the kid is just so aware and so technically solid as a player already, and clearly he's going to grow and he's going to be better. I think he could probably improve his running with the ball a bit, but two touch, rides a tackle, lets the ball go. And that makes it so much harder for midfielders and teams to close down. And I think that is now helping us move up the pitch. Clearly, it's to do with Blasner's formation as well, helping things out. But yeah, I can't agree more, Greg. I think it's fabulous.
Just looking at the chat here.
Yeah, you're about to do what I was just going to jump in there.
No, you take it, Nick. You take it.
Jim, I don't know if you can see the chat, can you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the comparisons are being made, early comparisons. I mean, I know he's only a youngster. He's only a kid. He's just starting out on his Premier League pathway. James McArthur, Jeff Thomas, Attilio Lombardo, all in the middle of the Palace. Peter Nicholas, Jerry Murphy. Okay, these are the names that these guys out there are comparing his potential to be. Your thoughts, mate?
Well, from what I remember, Kabaye was one of our best midfield players last 10, 15 years. I don't know when he packed in or when he left us, but he's got everything. You know, he's got better every game. I mean, I think the first couple of games, he was a bit, you know, Premier League's a bit of a whirlwind if you've not played in it, I think, for these lads coming out of the Championship. But he's adapted so well, and he's probably been one of our best players. I mean, apparently he was brilliant the first half at Liverpool, and certainly yesterday. You're right, everything goes through him. But if you look at our team now, and it's all down to the manager, you can see players getting into positions, not through how they used to play, how this manager wants them to play. He's making them find space. They're more aware of their passing. Some of our passing over earlier periods, we get the ball and we just give it away again. We give it straight back and it'd be under the cosh. And at the moment, that's not happening. And I think it's all down to the new manager. But certainly, Wharton, he's going to be a top player. I mean, he's top player already, but he's only going to get better. And he never gives a ball away, apart from the fourth goal, their goal, when he get caught in the middle of the park. And I was just saying to somebody, this lad's brilliant. He doesn't give the ball away, and then he gets caught out. And Hughesy had to come in and slaughter the guy, and they scored the goal from it. But he's quality. What I like about him is he's always looking forward. I got fed up watching midfield players in the Premiership get the ball off the back four and knock it straight back to him. This guy don't do that. He's aware of everything around him. He'll let the ball run, turn, and all of a sudden we're going into attacking formation. Definitely top player.
Thank you, mate. And ladies and gentlemen out in Facebook land, YouTube land, the Red and Blue Review are very proud with our association with Jim Cannon. That's why he's on the show talking that sort of stuff, not the other dribble the other two are talking about all evening. So, mate, you are more than welcome. Greg, before you carry on, I just want to come back to something you said earlier on with reference to Elise. That's the first time you'd seen him. Sadly, it's probably going to be, unless you get a ticket to one of the last remaining games, it'll probably be the last time you see him. Somebody has just said in the chat, Elise is likely to go this window. There's going to be a whole host of teams happy to pay his release clause, ladies and gentlemen. Please don't get too attached to the Elise thing. It reminds me a little bit of the Conor Gallagher thing. The man love for Conor Gallagher when he was with us was immense, okay? And rightly so at the time. Simon Cribbin, I can see you out there. Griff, I know you're out there as well. There's a couple of other old Monty, I know you're out there. Good evening, Mick. But please do not get too attached to the Elise thing. I would be amazed if we were sitting here in the middle of August and Elise is still a Palace player come the new season, the new campaign. I'll eat me a hat, okay? Because I just can't see anything but a transfer, because we actually need to lose one of the senior players, and he's obviously a senior player, to bring in the three or four players that we do need in other positions. So, my opinion, Greg, that could actually be the last time you see him. We interrupted, we deferred onto something else. So you carry on, mate.
No, not at all. Look, so I think the goal came at about 7 or 8 minutes. So we pushed forward, I think, with Eze, and then I think the ball got sort of caught up in just outside sort of the D of the 18-yard box, and it was picked up by Will Hughes, who I actually thought had a great game yesterday. A much improved player in my opinion, and I think he definitely made some important contributions, some good touches, and I think the ball sort of springs to Anderson, who puts over a really decent cross. And then I'm not entirely sure how tall Elise is. He doesn't look the tallest, but he out jumps at their keeper, who I thought, to be honest, I thought it was pretty bad goalkeeping. Especially having seen it back now on Match of the Day. I think he really is a bit of a Weetabix dive, Elise just, nods it straight in. And you're thinking, great, 1-0 up 7 minutes. And my first thought in my head was, I've supported Palace long enough tonight, it's not going to stay like this. So, naturally, I go in with the positive attitude. And then I think within a few minutes, the ball breaks for Tyrick Mitchell. And, I think, no disrespect to Tyrick, but anybody but the left back, maybe, it might have found the target and probably should have scored. But the expectation on him to score, isn't there. You hope he scores. But, the every time Palace went forward from that moment there, I felt like we were going to score. West Ham were just not there. I think Jim said it right at the top of the show. They looked like they just didn't want to be there. Forget sort of European hangover. That they didn't get out of bed. I couldn't believe.
But you say forget that, Greg. You say forget that, but don't you think that's quite actually? I think there is something to that European thing. If you remember last year and the year before, Fulham had the similar sort of thing when they were playing Thursday, Sunday every week. Their results really fell away. And I'm delighted that we've actually affected West Ham's ability to be in Europe next season, because we have, and we certainly have now. But I think there is something to that.
No, look, definitely. I was probably maybe a bit flippant, but I really thought West Ham were woeful, but not only that, Palace were exceptionally good. That first half an hour was pure Palace. The possession, I know possession isn't everything, and certainly under Roy, we were like 20% possession most of the time. We must have had a very high percentage of the ball of that game, you know, and retaining it, but not just sideways football. It was creating chances. You know, Mateta was getting into space. You know, every time we went forward, like I said, I just thought we were going to score. And then, you know, moving on to the second goal, it's sort of a similar vein again. I think the ball breaks free. Mateta is sort of placed in, you know, just in front of the 6-yard box. Seeing that in real time, I was like, oh, I really should have scored. And I sort of sat back in my chair, not really expecting anything to sort of come of it. And then the sort of ball loops up in the air. And it just sort of hung there for days. And then all of a sudden, you've got the acrobatic finish. You know, I definitely wasn't expecting that. I mean, that just came out of thin air. You know, and this is probably, what, just after the 10-minute mark, and we're 2-0 up.
Correct.
And I was just like, wow, 2-0 up, 10 minutes.
Now, it was one of those situations whereby, and somebody said it to me in the crowd after he scored that goal, technically-wise, what a cracking strike that was. But that, if your luck's in, that's still going up as it hits the roof of the net. And it's actually, the trajectory was going up. But that could have easily ended up in the corporate boxes above it. Ian, how difficult was it to take that strike as he did?
Oh, because I know all about it, obviously. Yes, yeah. I think it's relatively easy, to be perfectly honest, Nick. It was amazing technique, and I put on my notes that SA shooting is pretty much the worst part of his game as well. And I know Rob Donovan, hello mate, said SA was actually quite wasteful. Seems impossibly hard to criticise him after that performance, but he could easily have had a hat trick. And he's right. You know, it's the spectacular ones are always the ones that stay in the memory, aren't they? But it's the meat and drink ones, the ones where instead of, you know, trying to pass it into the net, he should have absolutely larruped it past the goal at Fabianski yesterday. And there are a couple of other sitters that he missed as well. But nevertheless, listen, the guy's fit. And while he's fit, he's going to be amazing, isn't he?
Do you realise even your brother's taking a piss out of you in the chat? Do you realise that? Jim, there's also somebody who does know what he's talking about. Technical-wise, how difficult was that strike?
Well, if you're not at a high level like Eze, probably quite difficult. You've seen it in Sunday afternoon football. But he could do that another 20 times and it will go straight over the stand. I mean, the height he was at when he hit it, and it did hit the roof of the net, I thought it was going over. When he hit it, I thought, oh, and then went, oh. Top quality. I mean, he's an exceptionally good player. And there's not many could have done what he did there.
Now, before we move on, Greg, I just want to, I'm coming to Jim and Greg here, okay, because Ian wasn't in the stadium. Now, I don't know if you boys felt the same thing in the ground. Certainly, it first hit me at 2-0, but definitely at 3-0. Did you feel there was a funny vibe around the stadium? Well, I said, oh, I don't believe what's just happened, okay? I don't understand what's happened. This is not Palace. Can the real Crystal Palace come out of the changing rooms, please? It was just like a vibe where about it. This isn't right. This is something peculiar. There seemed to be a strange atmosphere around that time when after the second one in, and certainly when after the third one in, that Palace didn't really know what to do. You know, the Palace fans didn't. They did sing. They're glad all over and all the usual stuff. But it just seemed a very odd feeling in the stadium. Did any of you feel the same thing?
Yeah, I did actually. I would say after the third goal because I couldn't quite believe it. You know. I don't know if I'm trying to recall like a game I've been to in the past where we scored a hat full of goals. The games that stick in my mind, I think we beat Reading 6-1 and Southend 6-1 within a week of each other. But I don't know if the goals went in as fast as what they did. But they weren't Premier League games. This is a Premier League game, 3-0 up in, I don't know, it was just like not many minutes, 20 minutes or something, or 25 minutes. Yeah, and I think the atmosphere, it wasn't a bad atmosphere. I wouldn't say that.
No, not so.
It was. I think we were all in a bit of shock, but I was in shock. I just, you know, naturally, I sat there thinking, is this like an exhibition game almost? You know, am I watching a real league game that matters, or is this just kind of one of those you know, pre-season friendlies or something. But you're right. There was a strange kind of, I don't know what to do. The game was put to bed, to be honest. But, you know, we're Palace fans and we know that 4-3 could have happened. I'm sitting there forever the cynic thinking, well, they'll get one in a minute. Then they'll score right on half time and it will go in at like 3-2. And then, you know, within 5 minutes of the restart, it's 3-all. And I will always think like that.
Jim, did you feel that had the same feeling in your comfy padded seat with your prawn sandwich sticking out your gob?
Actually, I was standing. I think the Palace fans were just pleasantly in shock. It was just the way we played. Like, you can't take away from how good we played, but we probably played the worst team that's come to Selhurst Park this season to actually try and win a game. And talking to, I'd have got some of the West Ham fans in Spironi's, because I always rib them, and I say, how can you want to get rid of a manager that's actually got you in eighth position, won a European trophy last year, you're still going for a place in Europe. And this guy actually said to me, he says, because we set up not to win a game. Even at home, we set up to try and catch teams on the break. And I thought, well, that's very much how Roy Hodgson was. And he just said, he's too old for the Premier League now. It's a young manager's game. And then when you look at Glasner and you look at Roy, you've got to agree with him.
There's a couple of things that came out from while you were talking there. John Ellicott just said, at 5-2 up, and with 15 minutes to go, he was still worried about the last 15 minutes. And I'll make you right, John. And you mentioned the manager, Jim, and I had the honour of jumping onto one or two of the YouTube, the West Ham got loads of these fan YouTube channels and everything else, okay? And there was one in particular, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a guy sitting in his car on the way home. He normally does the live stuff, talking to the supporters outside the stadium after the game. And he said the reason he's doing it just with himself in the car, he said, because the rest of the West Ham fans are pissed off home. There was nobody left to talk to. So, which I thought was quite amusing. But he was actually saying, when we get rid of Moyes and everything else, I'm going to give you a list of names that I would like to see as our new manager. He said, right at the top of the list, I'll give you one right now, Oliver Glasner. Yeah, they just deluded them. They just deluded all of them. They're just clueless. Anyway, Greg, I keep interrupting you. Carry on, mate.
No, look, not at all. I mean, and then look, we're 3-0 up, and crikey, even I forget now. I'm sure we go 4-0 up. Please forgive me. Ball comes across. I think the 6-yard line, and Munoz is on the end of it. But I think Emerson, at the time, I thought Munoz had scored. But seeing it back, I think he goes to kick it. He doesn't quite reach it, and he sees that it's going in. That's a bit of luck, but when you're 3-0 up, and it was at 20 minutes. So 20 minutes, it's 4-0. That's unreal. The way Palace played, I couldn't believe it. You don't want to take anything away from the performance. And I was sat there. I think we've been brilliant, but I think West Ham have been terrible. There is Mateta slides in, sorry, for the fourth. Munoz with the third, the own goal was the third. There was a really good finish, striker's finish. I think he had the chance that was for 2-0. Yeah, I really think, that sort of made amends. And I think I said to the bloke next to me, I said, I think he's had 3 shots on goal, and he's got one now. And by the end of the game, obviously, where he picks up the other goal, it was like a 50% ratio. He's got two goals. You can't really criticise that. But at 4-0, you're in kind of wonderland.
So, Ian, at that point, West Ham poor or Palace outstanding? Where would you draw that line?
I think it's a bit of both. Clearly, they just played Eintracht Frankfurt, it was probably European team of the season or whatever, and run them close as well, and put a hell of a lot of effort in. And I would have expected a bit more. But having said that, clearly the formation that Glasgow is playing means that you've got lots of little layoffs and you've got lots of options. And when you give our players options and the chance to do flicks and that, again, it makes it so hard. It was so nice to see Ward-Prowse walking around, skulking like a spoiled child because he couldn't kick anyone or he didn't have anyone in our team to wind up and get sent off. And what I really liked about it as well, Nick, is that a bit like City, a bit like Pep's teams, we just didn't take our foot off the throat. We just kept going for more. And that's what I want to see from our teams. Just keep going. Mitchell could have had a hat-trick yesterday. I mean, he's become a completely different player in his formation. Richard didn't look out of place. He broke up a lot of play. In fact, I think it was for the fourth goal that he just stepped in and just took it away from Antonio in their half. I think it was a bit of both, but it was predominantly us on the front foot, I'd say.
Ian, could you have a look at the some of these comments going through the chat? So there's some great stuff going through there, and they're all loving it. And
you're right. The best one being my brother saying 100% Ian. That I'm gonna. Can I clip that? Can someone record this? All right. Phil Bell, amazing how the two centre backs' heads dropped after our first goal. Well, I mean, after both of them have been nutmegged during the game, I'm not surprised. Just like watching Brazil, Rob Cranfield, John Ellicott, the tennis stacks player, had 18 shots and only 7 on target. West Ham had 4 and 1 on target, but they still managed to score twice. We'll come on to that in a minute. And Jones saying the Glasgow won't let them ease up. And too right, some of them are playing for their contracts now, which is showing as well.
Because pre-match, I'm coming to you, Greg. Pre-match, I was quite concerned because they've got that Pacatara in their team, Kudos. I mean, they've got some good players. They weren't even, I don't even remember that Pacatara. So he's supposed to be this all shiny light. Go on, Greg, carry on, mate.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sure I haven't dreamt this up, but I'm sure I've seen an interview with Glasner saying that his best way of defending is attacking. That was what he was aiming for. I mean, that was it, wasn't it? That was the masterclass. The case in point really was 4-0 up in the first half. I mean, it's not going to happen every week. I completely understand that. I mean,
it's never happened before, Greg. It's history. It's the first time we've ever scored 4 in the Premier League in our history.
I think that I'm not ever really going to knock Roy, but I think the change in formation, it just goes to show you really that, I guess, the unwillingness to sort of bend on your tried and tested, I guess, but we wrote it off. They wrote it off, the management at the time as we're not going to play it. But I'm pretty certain toward the beginning of this season, maybe towards the end of the last season, we had said about the fact of playing, 3-3-5-2 or 3 at the back, as given that we've got, the Gay, Anderson, Richards.
I've been calling for it for years, isn't it? Let's be honest here. You mentioned Roy very quickly. Jim, I'm coming to you. Because of where you sit in the stand, in the stadium and everything else, has anybody actually mentioned Roy to you? How's his health? Do we know?
No, not heard, not a thing, not heard anything.
It's gone very quiet. If anybody has heard anything in the club, put it in the chat and I'll happily read it out. I just hope he's well and everything's, he's enjoying his bit of time off. But thank you for whoever raised that in the chat a minute ago. You were right to do so. Greg, I suppose we better talk about their goals.
Like Jim said earlier, caught in possession, middle of the park, free kick that sort of looped over the top, really, and the ball just sort of falls for Mikel Antonio, the player that we've been linked with for the past 10 seasons that you knew was going to score against us. I don't want to be critical of Henderson, but unfortunately I've got 2 points today to state the obvious, I guess. But I just thought it was really poor. you know, he just falls over Antonio. He doesn't really make any attempt. I don't know. I'm not a goalie and, you know, never played in goal, but I don't know. I just, it didn't look very commanding.
Well, let me jump in there because I'll give you Jill Holyoake's point of view because me and him spoke about this in great detail. I wish he was on the show tonight because he wasn't just critical. He was scathing about him. He actually came out, you know, this is not me speaking. This was Jill. Okay. So don't anybody slate me in the chat. He said, I'm sorry, but he effing well bottled that first one. He could have easy, you know. And I said, hold on a minute. I'll try to play devil's advocate a little bit. I said, don't forget, it was this guy that saved us 3 points last weekend at Anfield. Okay, he had an outstanding game. Don't give me that. He was bloody, he was effing this, he was effing that. I think he was at fault for both goals, if I'm brutally honest, okay? I mean, certainly was obviously the second one, but the first one, he tries to make himself big, a bit like he did a lot at Anfield last weekend. And he cocked it up. Would that be fair to Ian? Would that be fair to say? I know Kevin lines it out. He's a bit of a goalkeeper. Would that be fair to say?
I was just about to say, my bro is the goalkeeper. So, and a very, very good one as well. And I can't believe I just said that. Right. Yeah. And Ian would agree. It's unfortunately, Henderson is a bit of a strange one, isn't he? I think he's a better shot stopper than he is a keeper that commands his area. I don't think he talks enough for a start. And secondly, yeah, he certainly bottled the first one. Obviously made an absolute ricket of the second. But after the game, Glasner, which is what I liked, Glasner just said, look, you know, he's made mistakes, but then he earned us 3 points last week. So I'll forgive him. And fair play to him for doing that, because you can't let that. He knows, all keepers know themselves when they dropped, you know, dropped a ricket, and he certainly did do yesterday on both goals.
Jim, what sort of shit would he have got in the changing rooms by the rest of them after the game? Would they have just ribbed him in a friendly manner? It didn't matter. It didn't affect the result or anything else. Would they have just given him... What would have happened in the changing room?
Oh, they would have ribbed him for the second goal, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it was a calamitous mistake, wasn't it? It was. But to be fair, I mean, Mitchell lobbed the ball back to him. Goalkeepers don't want the ball coming bouncing at them. And he's knocked it up in the air so as it bounced in front of him. And obviously his control let him down. But, I mean, he's, you know, the comments there are, I think his weakness is crosses. That's why I like Johnson better than him, because Johnson, I think, is much better than there, and I think he's equally a good shot stopper. The guy makes some unbelievable mistakes. I looked at that. The first thing I said when that goal went in is he bottled it, because he could have just come out. The ball was only sort of chest high. He didn't have to jump up for it. He could have come out and taken anybody that was there with him. He could have got the ball, but he chose, I think, Greg just said he's sort of trying to just maybe block it. But I think in them situations, you've got to come and get it. Come and get it. I played with a lad called John Burridge, and he would have had three people in hospital, and he would have the ball in his hands.
But funny you should say John Burridge. In the chat earlier on, somebody was saying that John's been on social media overnight, giving it absolute, not just to our keeper, but to their keeper as well. He's been giving it digger, bless his heart.
He hates the way keepers play out at the back. But they do, when you look at the mistakes, you could do a month of mistakes of keepers trying to pass out at the back.
Jimbo, we need to get him on. We need to get him on the show. Over to you. You can sort that out.
He's in Oman, but I'm sure he'd come on.
I'll tell you what, it'll be the best show ever if you get him on it. I mean, let's face it, bag of frogs, okay, but I love the bloke. I'd love to get him on for one. Ian, you wanted to say something, mate. Go for it. And you're on mute.
If we get him on, what we've got to do is we've got to try it. So one of us throws an orange and it appears from in his room and he dives across and saves it. Because he was famous for that, wasn't he? Sitting watching the TV and his missus throwing fruit at him just to keep his reactions. I think that I was scared because Jim pretty much stole the thunder and saying that Budgie would have wiped him out. He'd probably done a handspring as well in the process. But I was going to say a similar thing about Nigel Martin. Nigel Martin would have come and played. I mean, Nigel Martin played in front of Ninja and Thorny and was wiping them out all the time. So, and that's just what I do wonder what people see in Henderson at times, other than shot stop. I think shot stopping, I think he's good. He is good. But to get that far as a professional, and certainly as a keeper in such a vulnerable position, and still have that weakness is quite disconcerting, which would probably explain the rumours why we've been looking at other keepers as well. So,
yeah, funny enough, you should find it. We'll finish up on the keeper there. Gio actually said to me today, he said he wouldn't be my third choice keeper, let alone my first choice keeper. And I thought that's typical Gio. Right, Jim, that's your task for the next week, mate. Get hold of Budgie for me. Okay, give him my mobile number because I'd love to. We'll have a great show if he came on. Just have a giggle and reminisce about the past, yeah? I'll leave that to you. Good man. Okay, right. Greggy, carry on, mate.
Yeah, look, so look, that's it. We're at halftime. We're winning 4-1. I mean, I just sort of sat back in my seat in what have I just watched? I was like, actually, do you know what? That was brilliant. You know, I know this sounds a bit daft. You know, not having been for a while, my remit, my expectation was like, I just wanted to see a good game. You know, naturally, a Palace win is always great. You know, I would have taken a 2-2 or a 3-2. You know, I didn't want to see a 0-0 ball draw, and I'm sat there with 4-1 up, and I'm just like just giggling, just thinking, well, this is brilliant. You know, I should come every week. But naturally, in the second half, West Ham come out. They're a bit brighter. You know, I was thinking, what does Moyes say at half time? He's like, is it lads? You know, you've been in Leverkusen. You know, you've run close. You're knackered. You're 4-1 down. You're playing like, you know, a bag of, you know, what really would be said? You know, there's not really much you can say. And I was watching Calvin Phillips warm up and all the subs warm up because where they were running to the corner, that's pretty much where I was in the main stand. And I was thinking, none of those players really want to come on in the second half, do they? That's, you know, you don't really want to come on because this game is a bit of a dead rubber now. But, you know, to West Ham's credit, they were a bit brighter. I wouldn't say they really put us under any particular pressure. You know, the goalie didn't really have much to do. And, you know, I think it's not that Palace was stifled. I think, you know, naturally, when you're 4-1 up, the foot doesn't really need to be on the gas.
Our substitutes did affect that too a little bit, didn't it? Amahada came on for Walton, who took a knock, and the talk about it is he's got some sort of Achilles problem, which is a bit of a worry. He also, it was Schlupp and Riedewald for Hughes and Eze, but also Ayew and Edouard came on for Mateta and Elise. Now, I get the impression those up the Mateta and Elise subs were looking ahead of this week's game. Maybe they're giving them a little bit of a rest. Don't forget, Elise hasn't been that long back from injury. And likewise Hughes and Eze going off. But I do think those, some, you know, there was all the others that came on didn't do bad at all. But we weren't as prolific, I don't think, in front of goal with those players going off. Carry on, Greg.
No, look, absolutely, and I'm not knocking Ahamada when he came on, but you can clearly see not had much game time. It's definitely not a criticism because I think he's young, and I think there's still time for him to to make a name. I think he probably just has to bide his time. Certainly with Lerma, Doucouré. I mean, you've got a great midfield now, really. You know, if this squad's fully fit, you know, and you've got the pick of the bunch, it's very difficult to select your 11. But yeah, you're right. The substitutions have probably affected that. But that's proactive from the manager, isn't it, to make substitutions and you know, take off players when you don't necessarily need them. But look, I'll do my best to wrap it up. I appreciate I don't have the panache of Ian Noble. You know, I'm not the Viennetta of the match report, unfortunately.
You did fine, mate.
But obviously, Mateta bags the fifth, and it's a great finish. To be fair, it's a striker's goal. You know, that's what you hope that, you know, players like him do. And I'm quite thrilled for the bloke actually, because when he first arrived, I really didn't rate him, and I really just thought, oh, why have we signed this guy permanently? And you know, £8 million I think we got him for in the end. And really now, under Glasner, yeah, it's just clicking, isn't it? It's, you know, and I'm not going to knock Edward either. He came on. I thought he's able, you know. But I know that's a conversation that we have quite regularly, you know, Mateta over Edward. But you know, Mateta at the moment, you know, he's a handful.
Four goals
consecutively at home. It's a lovely run. It's, you know, it's nice. Enjoy it while it lasts. So I'll wrap up there. You know, 5-1. You know, I've been away for six years.
We'll do the stats in a minute, Nigel. Well done, Greg. You did a great job of that. Ian, you wanted to say something, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I said earlier, under the Roy Gray days, you know, that it wasn't necessarily the squad that was the issue. It was the lack of chances that the formation allowed. And it's funny, isn't it? Because if you would give people the option of having Salah, Mudrik, other players of bigger clubs, you gave them the chance of having them over the likes of Mateta and Edvard, they'd willingly snap your hands off. But this Glasner is proving that if you give strikers the chances, they will score. And that's always been the issue for us, or certainly in the last few years. We have not been creating enough quality chances. You know, and as he who will not no longer be named has put on there, Mateta, 78% shot accuracy, best in the Premier League. You know, the only reason Salah's got, you know, 18 goals is because of Nunes. You know, they need 18 chances to convert one. And I think we need to be a bit more realistic with the quality of players that we've got. It's all about finding the right formation for them. And Glasner seems to have done it. The wing-backs are proving to be an absolute boon now.
Yeah, especially in Munoz. Nigel, can I have the stats, please, mate? So, 61% possession, 18 shots, 7 of which were on target. 4 more corners that we didn't score from, 9 all on the fouls. I mean, and on another given day, somebody said to me this morning, it could be 7-8, it could have been 9-0. Yeah, and they were West Ham fans saying that. The Premier League now sits. Somebody has just made a point in the chat that it doesn't go up high enough on that one, Nigel. But do you know what? Brighton are still catchable. They're currently sitting in 10th place on 44 points. And us sitting there on 36 points, you know, we're only 8 points behind them and there's still 5 games to go. They are, you know, and they're not in the best form of their lives. So I think the bottom three will probably stay for themselves. I don't think any of that's going to change, really. Albeit Luton and Burnley are both having a go. Burnley put a little bit of distance between them and Sheffield underneath them. But I still maintain those three will go. I would love it if the one in 16th place were to replace Luton. I'd like Luton to stay up, if I'm honest with you. I think they've been a breath of fresh air this year, the way they've tried to have a go at it. I'd love it if Everton got another 10-point deduction and they went, but that's because of my thoughts about anything. Merseyside, as you're all probably aware of that. Upcoming fixtures, what we got coming up? Well, obviously, we got a very important game on Wednesday at home at Newcastle, 8 o'clock kickoff at Selhurst. Then the big one, the party one, and don't forget, we could actually be technically, mathematically safe before we even kick a ball at Fulham. If we beat Newcastle on Wednesday night, we are technically safe. Well, mathematically safe. We're technically safe now anyway. We're certainly not looking over our shoulders anymore. But for those of you who are going to come and join us on the boat, just say yes, Nick, in the chat. If you're coming on Saturday and you're going to be on the boat, it'd be great to see you all. Please bring your wallets with you because we're doing some charity auctions of shirts and all that sort of stuff. Loads of Peter Kay tickets and somebody else's tickets. So there's going to be loads of auctions and raffles and all that sort of stuff on the day. So if you are going to be there, put a note in the chat. Let me know you're going to be there. It'd be great to see it. Ian?
Yeah. Just on, seeing as we're talking about Good News Palace, et cetera, et cetera, the under-21s got into the International Cup final again. Does anyone know when that actually is going to be? I'm assuming it's going to be at Selhurst. Anyone out there? Let us know in the comments.
I don't know off the top of my head. Nigel, if you do know, jump on. And John's just written in the chat. For those of you who are not aware, there was a bucket collection going around Sellers yesterday. They raised roughly £800 for the Charlie Ellicott Fund in aid of Young Lives versus Cancer. So well done to each and every one of you that helped with the bucket collection and those of you that donated as well. Jim, Brett Kemp says in the chat, hi, Jim. Dave Price says hello. Hope you're well, pal. Always likes your opinions, as they're always right, pal. Personally, I think he's talking cobblers, but I just thought I'd pass it on to you, mate. Who's that?
Everton's still to be confirmed.
Oh, so that game hasn't been arranged yet, no?
Definitely at Sellers to be confirmed.
Yeah, again, another one that we ought to get a good crowd for. Right, have I missed anything off there? I know we've got the other teams to sort out. I'm going to do them now. The other clubs, other teams' results, the under-21s, as Ian's just alluded to, 4-2 on Tuesday in the Premier League International Cup. The under-18s drew 1-1 with Tottenham on last Saturday. And the Lewis women and Palace women we've already spoken about. Lone watch, no match this week for David Boateng at Dundee. Killian Phillips came on the 86th minute for Aberdeen against Celtic in the semi-final of the Scottish Cup. The match went to 3-3 in extra time and Celtic won 6-5 on penalties. Killian Phillip missed the decisive penalty. Oh, dear. Owen Goodman was on the bench again for Colchester, who lost 1-0 away at Notts County. Kofi Barber played the full match and John Kamani-Gordon played the first 45 for Wimbledon in a 3-2 away defeat at Tranmere Rovers. And Taylor Alamola played the full 90 minutes, but Malcolm Abioi stayed on the bench for Texas RWD Molenbeek, who played and won 4-2 against Kortrijk in the Belgian Pro League. So, and Luke Lange played 69 minutes for Helsinki, who won 2-1 at home to somebody else that I can't read. Right, so coming up this weekend, Nige, can you give us the next show date, please, mate? Because, ladies and gentlemen, we have a little bit of a treat for you on Sunday, the 28th of April at 8 o'clock. I won't be here, but Jill will be actually hosting the show. It's going to be interesting. And I don't know who he's on with, but Jill will be hosting the show. And as you know, and as discussed already this evening, his thought processes are all very upfront and direct, as you know. And I think he was particularly hard on our keeper yesterday, especially after his performance last weekend. But you can tell him that yourself next week. Greg?
Out of interest, I just want to know, has he got a goalie in mind that he'd like to have at the club? Because I do. And I think you'd be able to get him as well.
Got him.
I think Palace should go for Aaron Ramsdale at Arsenal.
And he's a good goalkeeper, isn't he? But he'd be earning a lot of money there, I would have thought.
Well, probably, but he's not playing.
He concedes bundles.
No, I reckon that would be a good signing for Palace. That's what the goalie that I would go for. But that's only on the basis, if Johnston was to move back to the Midlands, which I keep reading about. That might be falsehood, but, I think that would be what I would do.
Jim, Kev Lyons has just said in the chat, Jim versus Gel versus Budgie. That would be an interesting show, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be really good. I mean, if we could make that happen before the end of the season, that would be a right touch. I tell you, we'll have a real laugh. But on one condition, Mr. C, that you're on here with us as well. It wouldn't be the same without you. I think we're going to draw a line under there, boys. It's gone 9 o'clock. Some of us have got jobs to go to. One of us has got a house to move. I'm sure Jim's got a game of golf or something to do tomorrow. Playing golf tomorrow, mate?
Tuesday, yeah. Tomorrow afternoon, yeah.
Where are you?
Just my local club, Littlestone.
Cool. Well, have a good day, mate. I hope the weather stays dry for you.
Hopefully.
I was supposed to be cutting the grass, but I'm not too convinced. Greg, well done with your first inaugural attempt at doing the match review, mate. You did a sterling job.
First and last, probably.
Nah, nonsense.
Lionsy, still 80 people on.
Lions, are you still going to be you're going to be on before the end of this end of the season for us?
Yeah, definitely. I wasn't laughing because I thought you did a great job, Greg. I was laughing because I had visions of Nick cutting the grass with his brand new teeth. But obviously, you know, if, whenever you're short, give us a shout.
I'm not sure, mate. I'm 6'6". You know that. Boys, I'm going to draw a line. Ladies and gentlemen, out in Facebook land and YouTube land, or wherever you're listening to this podcast, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Your comments have been bang on. Hopefully next week it will be Jill and Jim and Budgie. That will be so funny. I'll pay good money to watch that. On behalf of these three and everybody connected with Red and Blue Review, have a safe week. I'll see you at Selhurst on Wednesday night. I'll see you on the boat on Saturday. What a fantastic 7 days it's been for Crystal Palace Football Club. Let's continue for the next week. Good night, everybody. Take care. Thank you, everybody.
Good night.